Good afternoon. This program is intended for print and paid audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to An Older Voice, an Audio Journal production presenting articles of interest for the senior community. In the program today, I will bring you articles from the Worcester Telegram and Gazette and from the AARP publications. This is Eileen reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And to begin our program today, we have a message. The Worcester Public Library announced the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15 through August 15. Created by Tactile Images, the exhibit uses patented technology that transforms iconic works of art into three-dimensional tactile renderings, allowing visitors to experience visual information through touch. The exhibit's design, in part, makes visual art more accessible to the blind or the visually impaired. The exhibit, Seven Art Movements, examines the evolution of history's art movements through tactile reproductions of works by renowned artists including Leonardo da Vinci, Johann Vermeer, and Vincent van Gogh. It also explores stylistic characteristics of the Renaissance, Baroque, Neoclassicism, Impressionism, Post-Impressionism, Art Nouveau, and Expressionism. The exhibition features seven tactile images, each paired with a corresponding fine art print. The Worcester Talking Book Library is committed to ensuring that everyone has access to educational and cultural experiences, said Lee Ann Hooley, head of the WTBL. This exhibit offers a unique opportunity for individuals who are blind or visually impaired to engage with art in a meaningful way, while helping sighted visitors gain a deeper appreciation for accessible design and inclusive programming. Once again, the Worcester Public Library announces the opening of an interactive tactile exhibit at its main branch at 3 Salem Square from July 15 through August 15. And to begin the program, I will go over the events from the Senior Scoop that are specific to this week. That's Crafts with Maureen Carlos on Tuesday the 28th from 10 to 11:30 a.m. There is a $5 fee. Learn to make flowers from different materials. And then a reminder that the REC Farmers Market resumes outside on Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. And finally, a reminder that on Wednesday, August 26, Foster's Clam Bake and Summer Trip to York, Maine. Foster's delicious lunch includes New England clam chowder, clams, mussels, steamed, Maine lobster, corn on the cob, red bliss potatoes, rolls, and blueberry crumb cake. For those who don't like lobster, they offer barbecue hickory chicken or vegetarian polenta with roasted vegetables. Our stops include Stonewall Kitchen and Cafe with a 10% off coupon and Short Sands Beach in its downtown shops. The modern bus departs the Senior Center back lot at 7:30 a.m. and returns approximately 5:30 p.m. The total cost, including the clam bake tax, gratuity, bus, and driver's tip, is $100, and it can be submitted to the Friends of the Worcester Senior Center, 128 Providence Street, Box 3, Worcester, Mass., 01604. be sure to include how many people and the full fee per person. And my first article today is from the AARP magazine under health. It says, Healthy You, Your Protein Prescription. Eating 25 grams of protein at each meal can help you stay strong and healthy. But what does that look like exactly? As any retired athlete can tell you, physical strength naturally declines with age, but eating enough protein throughout the day can help you hold on to your strength and muscle mass, says Dr. Roger Fielding, a senior scientist at the Jean Mia Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University. Accelerated loss of muscle mass, coupled with a loss of muscle strength, increases the risk for falls, fractures, mortality, and functional decline, including difficulty walking, climbing stairs, getting up out of a chair. Reduced muscle mass is also linked to a weaker immune system and an increased risk of diabetes and cognitive impairment. For older adults, 25 grams per meal from a variety of plant and animal sources can help meet the level needed to rebuild muscle mass and counter loss of strength as the body ages. Here's what you can look like on your table. 1 cup of Greek yogurt. Plain Greek yogurt is an excellent source of protein with about 20 grams per cup. Top it with almonds, walnuts, or granola to hit 25 grams. Grilled salmon. A 3-ounce piece of grilled salmon has about 25 grams of protein. Enjoy with roasted potatoes and asparagus for a balanced meal. Spaghetti with meatballs. 1 serving of spaghetti has about 8 grams of protein. Adding about 4 medium-sized meatballs boosts this classic to 25 grams. A little Parmesan cheese adds extra protein. A 3-egg omelet, stuffed. 3 eggs have about 18 grams of protein. To get an omelet up to 25 grams, add feta and spinach, or other protein-packed ingredients like cottage cheese, chicken, or mushrooms. And finally, there's tofu stir-fry. 1 serving of tofu, 3/4 of a cup, has about 16 grams of protein. And a cup of veggies like broccoli, carrots, and bell peppers, and enjoy with white rice for about 25 grams of protein.
Hello, listeners. Would you like to hear news from Holden, Paxton, Princeton, Rutland, and Sterling that you're not likely to hear on commercial television and radio? Tune in to Audio Journal every Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal. Have you listened to one of Audio Journal's most popular shows, Talking Topics, with host Bill Ruggiero? You can catch it on the second weekend of each month, airing Saturday at 3 p.m. and again on Sunday at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
And now from the AARP magazine for June and July, Heat, the Silent Danger. Vivek Chandas stepped from his Prius. The scorching air hit his cheeks like a sandpaper slap. It sucked the moisture from his eyeballs. The streets around him seemed utterly still. No birds, no pedestrians, just eerie, apocalyptic quiet. Chandas glanced at the temperature sensor he had been carting around his city, and it read 125 degrees Fahrenheit. The scientist had been studying heat for a dozen years, but had experienced something this searing only once before, on a sizzling rooftop in Doha, Qatar, that this wasn't the Middle East or Sandra's native India. This was Portland, Oregon, just days after the summer solstice in 2021, when high temperatures normally average about 74 degrees. Yet here Sandra's was, a trim man with salt and pepper hair, taking jaw-dropping measurements in neighborhood after neighborhood. An unprecedented heat wave had abruptly descended on the Pacific Northwest, and Shandis, a geography professor at Portland State University, understood exactly what that meant. Many of his fellow citizens were about to die, and most of them would be over 50. Shandis, 54, had been predicting such a catastrophe for years. Last summer, as he and I retraced his steps from the blistering day, he told me he took no pleasure in having been right. In Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, and Alberta, some 1,400 people died from the 2021 heat wave. In where Portland is located, 78% of the deceased were 60 or older. The sort of killer heat is becoming a bigger danger to older Americans, including in parts of the country long thought immune to its dangers. Since the 60s, incidents of extreme heat across the United States have increased by every conceivable measure across the country's 50 largest metropolitan areas. The average number of heat waves annually has tripled, and those spells last longer and have higher temperatures. As the Earth's average temperatures inch even higher, everything gets hotter. The land, the ocean, the air. The planet's hottest year since record-keeping started in 1850 was in 2024, and all 10 of its hottest years have come in the past decade. Although new weather patterns increasingly send Arctic blasts farther south in winter, that doesn't change the fact that across the country, new heat records are being set with increasing frequency. While many consider summer heat waves just an uncomfortable nuisance, they're actually a major threat to health and life in most years. Heat kills more Americans than floods, tornadoes, and hurricanes combined, and it works stealthily. Unlike other deadly events, which arrive in a rampage and leave physical destruction in their wake, heat usually arrives quietly, kills, and then dissipates as if it were never there. That can make the deaths it causes feel even more senseless and battling. And why are older people in greater danger? Physiological changes play a role. With age, your body becomes less able to effectively cool itself. But isolation, lack of mobility, and limited income also contribute to the potential peril. In short, the older you are, the more seriously you need to take a heat wave. Watching fatal heat waves occur in normally cool regions raises a question. How does a stealth heat event play out in an area that's not used to them? And how should older people protect themselves? So I went to Portland to find out. On the June day in 2021, when the killer heat wave began to blanket Portland, Beth Parmenter, 67, started her morning the way she did whenever the thermometer read hot, by tiptoeing precariously on the back of her couch to tack dark sheets over her living room windows. A small woman with wavy hair and blue eyes magnified by glasses, Parmenta was fit, having stayed active for decades doing water aerobics. Still, she felt wary of her couch-backed tightrope act. As a retired oncology nurse manager, she knew that a fall at her age could mean broken bones or worse. Parmenta, a native of Virginia, had chosen to live in Portland precisely because she hated the heat, and she visited for a summer in 74, loved the cool temps, and came back to stay 2 years later. But over time, the summers grew hotter and stickier and began stretching into autumn. To keep her second-story condo cooler, she bought honeycomb shades to block the heat from her southwest windows. During warm spells, she rose at 2 a.m. to draw back the sheets, raise the shades and open windows to let the cooler night air in, and at dawn, she buttoned it all back up again. Parmenta did this because, like tens of thousands in her city, she lacked air conditioning. For decades, AC had seemed unnecessary in Portland, but the 2021 heat wave was different. A ridge of high atmospheric pressure trapped hot air over the northwest, blocking cooling Pacific winds and preventing clouds from forming, a phenomenon known as a heat dome. With only a few days' warning, the thermometer hit 108, breaking a record that had stood for 40 years. The following day, it climbed to 112, and on the third day, it jumped even more, officially reaching a gob-smacking 116, hotter than record temps in hot cities such as Houston and Atlanta. In some neighborhoods and on the upper floors of some apartments, temperatures climbed even higher still. In her condo, Parmenta read, guzzled fluids, nuked frozen meals, and huddled in misery before her fan. Even a few feet outside its trajectory, she felt her sweat ooze. Her cat sat behind the fan, letting the air skim their fur. Through her window, she watched the birds, beaks open, and they panted on the sidewalk. It was totally miserable, and I've never been in heat like that. Across the region, people were suffering. Emergency crews found people unconscious in yards and on sidewalks. Doctors cooled overheated patients by stuffing them in body bags filled with ice. Portland hospitals saw around two summers' worth of heat-related ER visits in 5 days. Teams knocked on doors, handed out water, and offered free bus rides to cooling centers, air-conditioned libraries, and community centers in the convention center. Even as she suffered, Parmenta did her part. An emergency volunteer, she placed calls to older residents on a call list, trying to convince them to find a cool refuge. White-knuckling it through this awfulness, she explained, could actually get them killed. Still contrary to her own advice, she stayed put. No region of the country is now immune to a potential heat disaster, and the risk is accelerating. During a heat wave that struck Texas and Oklahoma in 2011, Dallas experienced 40 straight days of at least 100 degrees. The following year, a blistering spring in the upper Midwest drove the thermometer in Madison, Wisconsin, a full 40 degrees over the average in March. Montpelier, Vermont has broken daily June highs 9 times in the last 5 years. Reno, Nevada hit 106 only a single time from 1893 to 2000. But the city matched or exceeded that peak 8 times in the 25 years since. And in March of this year, a massive heat dome broke records for the month in 14 states. In Arizona and California, the thermometers hit 112 degrees. Across the country, the consequences have been increasingly fatal. From 1999 to 2023, heat-related deaths in the United States jumped 117%. While official statistics tallied about 2,300 heat deaths in 2023, that's likely an undercount. A 2020 Duke University study suggested a more accurate death rate total hovered around 12,000 annually. That's because no national standard exists for determining what counts as a heat fatality. Many death certificates list the cause of death that can be triggered by extreme temperatures, such as heart attacks, ischemic attacks, asthma attacks, and renal failure, while the real culprit remains unstated. The physiology is well understood. When temperatures skyrocket, the human body relies on an arsenal of responses to protect itself. Blood rushes to the skin to radiate the heat outward, and sweat evaporating off the skin helps cool the body. We crave water to replenish the fluids that we're losing. We yearn to slow down and find shade. And the hotter we get, the harder the cardiovascular system works to cool it down. The heart rate increases and blood vessels open wide. But with time, the body's cooling system becomes less effective. Older people feel less thirst, even when they're dehydrated. They don't sweat as much. As blood vessels stiffen, the heart has to work even harder to push blood to the skin surface. Hormonal and metabolic changes can blunt biological responses, as can blood pressure pills, diuretics, and some antidepressants. Conditions such as asthma, diabetes, and kidney disease can also impair the body's ability to cope with high temperatures. When an older person overheats, their blood pressure drops and their core temperature rises. If they don't find a way to cool down, what starts as heat exhaustion with symptoms such as dizziness and nausea can progress to heat stroke, an urgent condition that can cause irreversible organ damage and death. Another symptom of heat exhaustion is faulty decision-making, which means the person may not even realize they're in need of help. Christy Ebby, a climate health professor at the University of Washington, told me about an older acquaintance who played tennis one hot day, came home rehydrated while sorting his mail, and after he showered, he found his bills in the trash and his trash in the freezer. His core temperature had risen to the point where he was disoriented without realizing it. To stay safe from the heat, it's important to acknowledge the danger. To an older adult who's like, oh, I'm going for a walk at noon today because I could do it 20 years ago, well, they have to recognize that both their body is changing and the climate is changing. And temperatures are hotter and you are older and less tolerant. Shandis and I drove beneath a freeway toward the Portland suburbs, off in the distance. Glaciated flanks of Mount Hood beckoned. On the hottest day of the heat wave, Shanda told me he'd driven past properties where homeowners had left out ice coolers of drinks for passing strangers. He himself had pulled over and handed out cold drinks and bottles of water at bus stops. Not one person turned him down. He found that their apathy and exhaustion disconcerting. There wasn't anyone who said, I'm good. Everybody was like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Few people truly appreciate the power of heat, its capacity to sneak up without warning. It doesn't bend tree branches or blow hair across your face to let you know it's arrived. The ground doesn't shake. It just surrounds you and works on you in ways that you can't anticipate or control. What's more, heat doesn't blanket a city at a uniform temperature. Areas with trees and grass and shrubs can stay cooler than those with lots of asphalt, which absorbs the sun's rays and releases heat at night. The difference between the hottest and the coolest areas often correlates with the money and influence, as Chandra's discovered over the years of research. Temperature within a relatively small area can vary by as much as 25 degrees, enough to mean the difference between life and death. You can be at greater risk than someone across town, across the street, or even in a different unit within the same building. This was evident in the 2021 tragedies unfolded. On the hottest day, Chandra's took measurements in Portland Lad's addition, a strip of big houses surrounded by green lawns shaded by century-old elms. The air was hot but survivable. But in the lower-income neighborhood of Lentz, near several highways, a train-link fence, and an abandoned lot, Chandra touched his hand to the pavement and had to snatch it quickly away. You couldn't even keep it on there for a second, he says. It was like putting it on a flame. And that's where his air temperature gauge showed 125 degrees. The surface temperature was 185 degrees. It's not just individuals who need to adapt, though. It's governments, aid organizations, housing providers, and more. And vulnerable populations, including older people, must be at the center of their attention. The number of people over 60 worldwide is expected to double to 2.1 billion, that's with a B, in the next quarter century. Meanwhile, retirees in the United States are still moving south. And that combination increased the number of people over 65 living in some of our hottest places, Arizona, Georgia, South Carolina, by more than 50% between 2010 and 2020. At the same time, colder areas, especially in New England and the upper Midwest, are heating up faster and more dramatically than the already hot Sun Belt. These places, too, have significant populations of older residents, but frequently lack the infrastructure to tackle high temperatures. The number of air-conditioned homes in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont is far below the national average. And Maine has proportionately more residents over 65 than any other state. But even access to air conditioning is no guarantee of safety. During Hurricane Irma in 2017, a dozen people, ages 57 to 99, died from exposure to excessive heat when the transformer powering the air conditioning at their Florida nursing home blew. An older woman died in 2024 from heat-related causes in Arizona when the power company shut off her electricity for unpaid bills. At least seven of those who died in Portland in 2021 had air conditioning units that were either unplugged or didn't work. In some states, AARP offices have advocated for summer disconnection moratoriums to prevent utility shutoffs during dangerously hot weather. Several states have since enacted related laws, but more than half still allow such shutoffs. Most states also lack requirements for backup generators at long-term care facilities, which would ensure that nursing homes or assisted living facilities wouldn't lose air conditioning if power went out during a heat wave. Experts confess to an even bigger fear. During peak demand, utilities in hot cities often beg residents to dial back electricity use to avoid blackouts. But energy demand and costs are climbing quickly, and the power grid is aging. Air conditioning is only as good as electricity behind it, and in a heat wave, that's the very thing most at risk. If the power goes out during a heat wave, we are cooked, literally cooked. And it's the older adults who will face the disproportionate burden of that outage, Sandra said. In fact, research in 2023 determined that such a tragic scenario over a period of 5 days in Phoenix would send half of the city's 1.6 million residents to the ER. The projected number of deaths would be 13,000. When the heat receded from her apartment in 2021, Beth Parmenta, the nurse and volunteer, was still very much alive. Her dark sheets and honeycomb shades, fans, and other precautions she took may well have saved her life, but she knows she took a risk by staying put. What Portland went through was truly a wake-up call, she told me, and it scared me. In 2024, she and others in her building got together and had air conditioning installed. And Parmenta remains haunted by the voices of some of those she called as a heat wave volunteer. She still recalls the helplessness she felt not knowing how or whether people would act on her call. She thinks often of one particular man, a lonely, frail-sounding gentleman. He hadn't yet turned on his AC because he told her, "I can't afford to. I won't be able to eat." Due to the confidentiality of her volunteer role, she never found out how he fared. But to this day, she feels the weight of what he said. The Pacific Northwest, with its abundant hydropower, has some of the cheapest electricity in the country, and he still had to worry about utility rates, forcing him to skip meals. AARP is working to bring utility bills down for older Americans. Portland and other places in the Northwest have begun enacting heat mitigation policies, planting trees and breaking up parking lots with shrubs. Construction design rules now mandate that apartments keep indoor temperatures at or below 78 degrees. Some local governments now even provide air conditioning to low-income homes and have installed thermometers in some subsidized housing to better understand indoor temperature risk. These adjustments make a lot of sense. Research suggests that by 2040, with continued warming, heat events should strike the Northwest roughly every 5 to 10 years. To help other localities take action, Shandis has put together neighborhood temperature maps for more than 130 cities worldwide, many which have now been put in place heat mitigation practices. Shandis encourages older people to reach out to local leaders to make sure they have a plan for extreme heat. There is plenty that individuals can do to prepare themselves, Shandis said. If you don't have air conditioning, consider getting it and look into the possibility of local subsidies and don't be a hero. If you don't have a way to keep your house cool, make plans to stay somewhere else when excessive heat is in the forecast. Surviving a heat wave involves more than air conditioning. Heat resilience is not just about cooling. It's about hydration, preparation, social support, and awareness.
Are you a Worcester Regional Transit Authority paratransit rider from Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, or West Boylston? Did you know that you no longer have to call customer service to book your trips? You can now take advantage of our new online reservation system and book your trips online at any time. Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to set up your online account to begin scheduling your trips. Please note the online reservation system is an additional option for your convenience. You can still call customer service to book your trips.
In from the Sunday paper, the arts section, we have Square One Players set to send up theater favorites. When the newly formed Square One Players staged the touching Joe DiPietro comedy, Over the River and Through the Woods, 5 summers ago in 2021, the community theater founders did not know if they would make it to a square, a two, or three. We had no idea. Coming out of a pandemic, said Joanne Smith, the theater company's co-founder, co-owner, and co-operator, along with Tara Alano. The response to the show staged at the Flanagan Theater at Southgate in Shrewsbury turned out to be a highly encouraging first step. We were pleasantly surprised that people were eager to come out, said Smith. Next, in the spring of 2022, Square One Players put on the Paul Elliott comedy, Exit Laughing, followed by the ever-popular musical Nonsense in the summer. Both shows also did very well, and we said, okay, we can. So now Square One Players has something to celebrate and laugh about on its 5th anniversary with a production of Forbidden Broadway's Greatest Hits, running on 2 Saturdays and Sundays, April 1 and 2, August 1 and 2, and August 8 and 9 at the Flanagan Theater. I can't believe we started this group 5 years ago in August of 21, still reeling from the pandemic and hoping to get this little community theater off the ground. We've been very lucky with having great actors, directors, and audiences along for the ride with us, Smith said. Forbidden Broadway's Greatest Hits is basically a review-type show making fun of all things Broadway. The original Forbidden Broadway debuted in New York City in 1982. The creation of writer and producer Gerard Alessandrini, who grew up in Needham. The show quickly became famous for its parodies, and it ran at Paulson's Supper Club for 2,332 performances. Alessandrini has updated and rewritten the review more than 24 times over the years, and the shows have been staged around the world. The production takes similar songs from musicals such as Phantom of the Opera, Les Miserables, Hairspray, and twists the lyrics to hilarious effect. The show also includes people that are known for Broadway, like Carol Channing, Liza Minnelli, and Ethel Merman. It's very silly, a lot of fun, and we have a very talented cast, so we hope the audience truly enjoys it. Other shows that get spoofed include Monty Python's Spamalot, which Square One Players has staged. It pokes a lot of fun at Broadway and the things we've been doing for the past 5 years. And the cast has been doing a great job just portraying these crazy characters. Square One production of Forbidden Broadway's Greatest Hits features a cast of 15, with 11-year-old Kyrie Dell'Aria as MC. Well-known local theater veteran John Leslie has a range of roles from Sweeney Todd and Manny Patinkin to King Arthur and Harvey Fierstein. Jeremy Woloski, who has directed most of the theater company shows, returns to direct. The musical director and the show's pianist is Chris Layton, with choreographer Tiana Brody. Square One Players has settled into presenting 2 productions each year at the Flanagan Theater, usually with a comedy or a comedy drama in the spring and a musical in the summer. Musicals, excuse me. Musicals have also included a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum last year. When the 5th anniversary was approaching, we weren't sure what we were going to do, Smith acknowledged. Square One Players picked the Ray Cooney farce, Run for Your Wife, for the spring comedy, but the summer musical remained up in the air. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum had been a big undertaking with a cast of 18 performers. The initial feeling was to do a smaller show this summer, and Forbidden Broadway's greatest hits seemed to meet that criteria, since it only calls for a cast of four and a pianist. Then a funny thing happened on the way to auditions. Many more people than expected showed up, and most of them new to square one. We had a lot of people come out, and we just loved everybody, Smith said. So rather than a cast of four, the show has 15. Only two have been with us before, so that means we are lucky to cast 13 new people to square one production, and they are very talented. So we hope they will return to audition for us again and again, Smith said. We're going to go small, but nope. But hey, it's our fifth, so let's do it big. We're happy with it. Meanwhile, we knew there would be a lot of costumes, and we didn't realize how many. So when it came to costumes with outfits ranging from Hairspray to Les Miserables, square one asked, what did we do to ourselves? However, Wolofsky knows Joel Seeger, who has run the Vanilla Box Productions in Worcester and is also a costume designer. Seeger agreed to come on board with Square One Players for the first time with Forbidden Broadway's greatest hits, and he's been great. So easy to work with, Smith said. The Square One Players emerged after the Regatta Players, which had been putting on plays at the Flanagan Theater since 2010 and was a popular theater outlet in Shrewsbury when it shut down in 2020. The Regatta Players have been planning a production of Over the River and Through the Woods, but was canceled because of the sudden onset of the COVID pandemic. Smith, Tara Alano, and Tara Lamoureux had all been involved with the Regatta Players, mostly behind the scenes, and had also served on its board. They were part of the team that were going to put on Over the River and Through the Woods. The three agreed to not only go ahead with Over the River and Through the Woods, but they also formed the Square One Players to stage it. Lamoureux subsequently stepped away from the operations after getting married, but still helps out. All of Square One's productions have been staged at the Flanagan Theater Southgate at Shrewsbury, the senior retirement community, and has been amazing and so good to work with. Residents will sometimes come into the theater and watch rehearsals. The Flanagan Theater seats 170 people, and they often sell out, especially the Sunday matinees. But other dates also do well, and the 2023 production of Monty Python's Spamalot completely sold out for the run. The theater space is relatively small, so Square One Players cannot stage musicals requiring a huge presentation. So we try to find musicals that are smaller. Jim Marie Wolofsky is very good at finding things that work on the stage. And Southgate at Shrewsbury also uses the theater for its own shows. We know we are guests, Smith said, but the current arrangement of two shows a year suits Square One Players just fine. After the summer show, there will be a nice little gap, and then there will be auditions in December for the Square One 2027 spring show. Speaking of which, we've applied for the right to the spring play. We haven't chosen a musical yet. With Forbidden Broadway's greatest hits, we wanted something where we could gather together again and laugh out loud, Smith said. And we have been very lucky, and we hope to keep doing this for the 10th anniversary. So that's 7:30 p.m. August 1, 2 p.m. August 2, 7:30 p.m. August 8, and 2 p.m. August 9 at a cost of $20, $17 for students and seniors. Tickets can be reserved at squareoneplayers.com. That's squareoneplayers.com.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
And from this week's telegram of Sunday the 26th, shredded wheat, a Worcester treat, the cereal produced in the Jackson Street plant. It's probably one of the most recognizable items found on the breakfast table of Americans, shredded wheat. Whole wheat, pillow-shaped, bite-sized, and crunchy. The breakfast staple was first mass-produced in the Worcester kitchen of Henry Perkey in the 1890s. Originally from Ohio, Perkey had originally come up with the boiled wheat and cream concoction after suffering from an upset stomach, and it was around this time that many American diets lacked fiber and mainly consisted of meats, fried foods, pastries, and alcohol, and many suffered from chronic constipation, indigestion, and dyslexia. In 1892, he bought the cookless recipe to his friend William Ford, and in 1893, he arrived at the Chicago World Columbian Exposition to show off his creation, which was not only marketed as a ready-made breakfast cereal, but also a healthy alternative to what was already on American breakfast plates. As Perkey showed off his creation, others popped up on the market, including Kellogg's Corn Flakes in 1894, Grape Nuts in 1898, and Rice Krispies in 1904. Originally, Perkey's plan was to distribute the machine used to create the cereal, but pivoted to manufacturing the cereal himself. In 1895, he moved to Massachusetts and established the Cereal Machine Company, later known as Shredded Wheat Company. Within 3 years, shredded wheat would be found in both South America and Europe. His manufacturing facility was originally located in Worcester's Junction Shops at 5759 Jackson Street and flourished. The factory remained there until 1902, and the neighborhood is now designated on the National Register of Historic Places. It includes Jackson Street, Beacon Street, Herman Street, and the railroad. The original building has since been converted to apartments. It was around this time that he also became president of the Oread Institute on Castle Hill, one of the oldest institutions of higher education for women in the country. According to the Worcester Women's History Project, the school is considered to be the first institution of its kind exclusively for women. According to the archival historical records kept by the Worcester Historical Society, the Institute published a cookbook with instructions on how to incorporate shredded wheat into meals from breakfast to dinner, written by Harriet A. Hybee, the superintendent at the Worcester's Oread Institute's New Era Cooking School that was opened by Perkey. At 147 pages, The Vital Question in Our Navy, 1898, contains recipes from blueberry shortcake to Welsh rabbit, all containing shredded wheat. By the turn of the 20th century, the company had outgrown Worcester, and a new plant was built at Niagara Falls, New York, nicknamed the Palace of Light, and was featured on the box of cereal for decades. In another twist of fate, the Niagara Falls building was designed by the Worcester architect Stephen Earle and Clellan Fisher. The building had a total of 844 windows and was supposed to be a pleasant place to work and included marble bathrooms and a roof deck with a view of the falls, along with an 80-seat theater and ballroom. Back in Worcester, the pier are known for designing Bancroft Towers, St. Matthew's Episcopal Church on Southbridge Street, and the Oddfellows Building on Main Street, as well as dozens more. Perkey died just a few years after the completion of the building in 1906 in Maryland. The company was sold to Nabisco in 1928 and again exchanged hands in 1993 at the height of the 1990s cereal craze, when shredded wheat was purchased from Nabisco by Post Consumer Brands. Before the factory's discontinuation in 1946 and the ultimate closure in 1954, the Niagara Falls building tourism draw rivaled that of the famous falls, with an estimated 100,000 people visiting the factory each year. As for the legacy of shredded wheat, Nabisco soon became only one of the many companies to produce its own version. Kellogg's launched its own in 1912 after Perkey's original patent expired. They now sell at least 8 different versions of a shredded wheat cereal. Annually, the cereal is celebrated on July 31, known as National Shredded Wheat Day, honoring Perkey and giving cereal lovers a chance to snag a box at a discounted rate through various retail stores. In Worcester, the cereal is celebrated and remains in the collection of the Museum of Worcester, with 2 glass jars containing shredded wheat prototypes dating back to September 26 of 1946. Within the last few years, the museum also acquired one of the original shredded wheat boxes from the Worcester factory, which is on display within the Fuller Gallery of Industrial History.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, "Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn," or, "Hey Google, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn."
And now we have Central Mass by the numbers. We have the number 14, Wonder, a growing food hall chain that serves an array of different cuisines, is slotted to open in August at the location of the former Boston Market at 14 Park Ave. The quick-serve restaurant will occupy the 3,500-square-foot building that used to house the Massachusetts Bond rotisserie chicken chain before a dispute between the landlord and the franchise owner shuttered the Worcester location in November. And then we have 105. A developer is looking to build a 105-room Hampton Inn Hotel in Washington Square, across from Union Station. First Bristol Corporation of Fall River will detail its plans, and the developer's plans call for a 5-story building. There will be 88 parking spaces. If built, it would be the second Hampton Inn location in the city, with another hotel on Prescott Street. And number 3, Worcester bars can serve alcohol until 3 a.m. until July 31, following a unanimous vote from the License Commission. The vote comes after the Massachusetts Senate bill passed on June 8th and intended to allow communities to celebrate the FIFA World Cup soccer activities. And then we have 5%. Massachusetts' highest court on June 23rd killed a ballot proposal that would have brought rent control back to Massachusetts for the first time since it was banned in 1994. The measure proposed by a coalition of housing advocacy organizations would have limited the annual rent increase for resident units in Massachusetts to the increase of the consumer price index of 5%, whichever was lower. And you have been listening to An Older Voice, covering articles related to the senior community. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. That's 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android device. This is Eileen, and I thank you for listening.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northboro, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system? Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.
This is Bird Note. Bearded vultures have lived alongside humans for thousands of years. Though they're mostly found in Asia and Africa today, the vultures' ancient nests in Europe are like time capsules of a bygone era. Bearded vultures are large raptors with a 7 to 9 foot wingspan. They subsist almost entirely on bones and marrow. They raise their young in cliffside caves that are reused over generations. These dark, cool alcoves accumulate nesting material and food scraps. And while bearded vultures have vanished across much of Europe, their nests remain like tiny, temperature-controlled museums. Researchers carefully cataloged the contents of 12 historical nests in southern Spain, where the birds haven't been seen in nearly a century. They found thousands of bones, dozens of eggshells, as well as hundreds of human artifacts. The hoard included fabric scraps, part of a slingshot, and a crossbow bolt. One nest even preserved a sandal made from woven grass cord that dates back to the 13th century. The researchers say these nests offer an unexpected glimpse of what life was once like for the people and wildlife that once thrived in this region. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Building an inclusive workforce where individuals with disabilities are welcome is possible thanks to Mass Commission for the Blind. Partner with them to hire individuals who are blind or visually impaired and reach your workforce goals. The success of your organization depends on the diversity of your team. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or mass.gov/MCB.